Well, hello. This is Bob Sutherland from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from a number of business sources, notably the Reuters, Bloomberg, Wall Street Journal, Triangle Business Journal, occasionally from the what is remaining of the business section of the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They have served our community so well since 1974, and they can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. Well, the Dow Jones was up 36 points yesterday, close at 27,147. That's the end of the day this past Wednesday. The S&P 500 was up 1.03 to close at over 3,000 at 3,673. The New York Stock Exchange was down 12.1 to close at 13,119. The NASDAQ was down 8.62 to close at 81.77. Gold was up $2.40 to close at $15.07.50, and crude at down 1.23 to close at $58.11. Well, from the New York Times, the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point Wednesday, its second move since late July, as it tries to insulate the economy against rising political risks and the fallout from a global slowdown. A growing number of officials expect one more reduction this year based on economic projections released after the meeting, in line with investor and economist expectations. But the Fed's announcement Wednesday is unlikely to appease President Trump, who has been pushing the central bank to cut interest rates to zero or even to negative territory. The Fed's policy interest rate is now set in the range of 1.75 to 2%, and not a single official sees it falling lower than 1.5 to 1.75 through the end of 2022. Now, while risks cloud the horizon, economic data still look okay, creating a complicated backdrop for the central bank. Businesses are hiring, consumers are spending, but the Trump's trade war and prospects of an unruly British withdrawal from the EU have markets on the edge. Meanwhile, inflation has been stuck below the Fed's target, giving officials room to lower rates without worrying about runaway price gains. Policymakers will continue to monitor the implications of incoming information for the economic outlook and will act as appropriate to sustain the expansion. That's according to the Fed's post-meeting statement. Well, the United States blames Iran for Saudi strike that portends a big hit for oil prices. This is from Washington, Associated Press. The United States tried to build its case Monday that Iran was behind the fiery weekend attack on key Saudi Arabian oil facilities that raised new war worries and sent energy prices soaring. Iran denied responsibility, while President Trump said the United States was locked and loaded to respond if necessary. American officials released satellite images of the damage at the heart of the kingdom's crucial Abqaiq oil processing plant and a key oil field. And two U.S. officials said the attacker used multiple cruise missiles and drone aircraft. The Americans alleged the pattern of destruction suggested Saturday's attack did not come from neighboring Yemen, as claimed by Iranian-backed Houthi rebels there. A Saudi military spokesman later made a similar accusation, alleging that Iranian weapons had been used in the assault. Iran rejected the allegations, and a government spokesman said that there was absolutely no chance of a hoped-for meeting between Iranian President Hassan Rouhani and Trump at the UN General Assembly next week. For his part, Trump sent mixed signals, saying his locked and loaded government waited for Saudi confirmation of Iran behind the attack, while tweeting that the United States did not need Mideast oil, but will help our allies. Well, from New York, the Senate's top Democrat plans on Monday to ask the Federal Communications Commission to consider whether two major Chinese telecommunications companies should be barred from operating in the United States. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, the Democratic leader, along with Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, will cite national security concerns in a letter asking the commission to review the licenses that give the two companies, that is, China Telecom and China Unicom, the right to use networks in the United States. In the letter, they will say that the two Chinese government-linked telecom operators could use that access to target Americans' communications, and they will warn that the companies could reroute communications traveling on their networks through China. The text of the letter was obtained by the New York Times. The request by the two senators shows how leaders in Congress are willing to apply more pressure to Chinese technology firms, even as President Trump seems to open to pulling back on some of the restrictions as part of the trade negotiations with China. The focus on two previously untouched firms shows that efforts to restrict Chinese technology firms are expanding. In recent years, Washington has levied $360 billion on tariffs on Chinese goods, moved to block the ability of U.S. companies to export their technology to China, and tried to stop certain products linked to the Chinese government from being sold in America. Well, OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma has embarked on a multi-billion dollar plan to settle thousands of lawsuits over the nation's deadly opioid crisis by transforming itself in bankruptcy court into a sort of hybrid between a business and a charity. Now, whether the company can pull it off remains to be seen, especially with about half the states opposed to the deal. The pharmaceutical giant filed for bankruptcy late Sunday. That was step one in a plan it says would provide $10 to $12 billion to help reimburse state and local governments and clean up the damage done by powerful prescription painkillers and illegal opioids like heroin and fentanyl. They both have been blamed for more than 400,000 deaths in the United States in the past two decades. The plan calls for turning Purdue into a public benefit trust that would continue selling opioids but turn its profits over to those who have sued the company. The Sackler family, that's S-A-C-K-L-E-R, the Sackler family would give up ownership of Purdue and contribute at least $3 billion toward the settlement. It will then be up to a federal bankruptcy judge to decide whether to approve or reject the settlement or seek modifications. Two dozen states, plus key lawyers who represent many of the 2,000-plus local governments suing the Stamford, Connecticut-based company, have signed on to the plan. Well, back here in North Carolina, new Amazon facility opens in Charlotte. The first robotics fulfillment center in North Carolina is open for business, according to Amazon. Hundreds of employees started work September the 2nd at the Charlotte, North Carolina facility, which will ship smaller customer orders, including books, electronics, household items, and toys, according to the Amazon statement. Robots at fulfillment centers can lift heavy items or transport products Amazon wrote in a blog post. The online retail company plans to have 1,500 full-time employees at the facility near the Charlotte Douglas Airport by the holiday shopping season. The company is still hiring. Interested applicants can go and text CLT now, that is CLTNOW, to 77088 for more information. Let me repeat that, please. The company is still hiring. Interested applicants can text CLTNOW to, that's T-O, 77088 for more information. The facility covers 855,000 square feet. That's roughly the size of 15 football fields. Starting wage at Amazon Fulfillment Centers is $15 an hour. That's without benefits, according to Amazon spokeswoman Rachel Leidy. The Charlotte City Council voted in 2018 to approve $13.4 million in incentives to bring the Amazon facility to the city. The new facility is just one of several in the area. A fulfillment center in Kannapolis employs about 1,000 full-time workers, the company told The Observer in May. Amazon is also developing fulfillment centers in Garner and Kernersville. But the Charlotte facility is the only North Carolina fulfillment center to incorporate robotics, the company said. The company has 50 robotics fulfillment centers out of 175 centers worldwide, Leidy said. Excuse me. Charlotte officials had hoped to draw Amazon's second headquarters to the city, but didn't make the shortlist announced in January of 18. Amazon said it would split the second headquarters between Arlington, Virginia, and New York's Long Island City. But last February, the company announced it would pull out of the Long Island City move after the local backlash, CNN reported. Excuse me again, please. The Amazon facility opening in Charlotte comes after criticism from workers and politicians of the company's treatment of warehouse workers. A number of workers announced plans to strike over Prime Day in July, the company's biggest shopping day of the year, according to Business Insider. Well, the United Auto Workers Union went on strike at General Motors, sending nearly 50,000 members at factories across the Midwest and South to picket lines Monday morning. With the two sides far apart, the UAW regional leaders in Detroit voted unanimously Sunday morning to authorize the strike. That's the union's first such walkout since 2007. It began at midnight after the union's current bargaining agreement expired Saturday. Today, we stand strong and say with one voice, we are standing up for our members and for the fundamental rights of working-class people in this country. So said Terry Deitz, or Ditz, I can't pronunciate that properly. It's D-I-T-T-E-S, Terry Deitz. He is a union vice president. As the strike took hold, the union and the company resumed negotiations at 10 a.m. Monday. The UAW is pushing GM to improve wages, reopen idle plants, add jobs at others, and close or narrow the difference between pay rates for new hires and veteran workers. GM wants employees to pay a greater portion of their health care costs and to increase workforce productivity and flexibility in factories, although the company has been earning substantial profits in North America, and it made $8.1 billion globally last year, it has idled three plants in the United States as car sales slide and overall demand for vehicles weakened. The strike is unfolding as President Trump's trade war with China wears on manufacturers and has stirred fears of a slowdown. Well, U.S. retail sales rise moderately with auto jump. U.S. retail sales rose moderately in August, driven higher by a jump in auto buying and healthy online sales. That's evidence that consumers are still spending enough to support growth. The Commerce Department said Friday that retail sales increased 0.4% last month. That's down from a strong 0.8% in July. There were also signs that consumers have become more cautious. Excluding autos, sales were unchanged for the first time since February. The data follows signs that consumer confidence, while still strong, has slipped a bit as the U.S.-China trade war has intensified. Well, Pacific Gas and Electric has agreed to pay $11 billion to a group of insurance companies representing claimants from the deadly North California fires in 17 and 18 as the company tries to emerge from bankruptcy, the utility reported on Friday. The utility said in a statement that the tentative agreement was reached with insurance companies holding 85% of the insurance claims from fires that included the November 2018 blaze that destroyed Paradise. It does not include thousands of uninsured and underinsured victims who have filed their own claims against Pacific Gas and Electric. Well, from Beijing, China will lift punitive tariffs imposed on U.S. soybeans and pork in a trade war with Washington. That's a state news agency said that on Friday, adding to the conciliatory gestures by the two sides ahead of negotiations. China will suspend tariff hikes on soybeans, pork, and some other farm goods, the Yinhua news agency said, citing the Cabinet Planning Agency and the Commerce Ministry. Beijing supports domestic companies in purchasing a certain amount of U.S. farm produce, but it gave no details. The move follows President Trump's decision Wednesday to postpone a planned October 1 tariff hike on Chinese imports to October 15. Hopes are growing that the two sides might defuse the prolonged dispute that is threatening global economic growth, but there's been no sign of progress on the main issues in their sprawling conflict over trade and technology. Beijing's decision to restore access to low-cost U.S. soybeans also would help Chinese pig farmers who use soy as animal feed. They are reeling from an epidemic of African swine fever that has caused pork prices to soar. Phone calls to the Commerce and Finance Ministries weren't answered on Friday. That's a national holiday in China. China has a huge market, and the prospects for importing high-quality U.S. farm produce are broad, Yinhua said. China hopes the United States will be true to the word, make progress on its commitments, and create favorable conditions for bilateral agricultural cooperation. Beijing imposed 25% tariffs on American farm goods last year in response to Trump's tariff hikes on Chinese goods. Importers were ordered to stop buying soybeans, the biggest U.S. export to China. China targeted farm goods, hurting rural areas that supported Trump in the 2016 presidential election. Secretary of Treasury Steven Mnuchin called Wednesday's tariff delay by Trump a goodwill gesture to the Chinese. The Commerce Ministry said Thursday importers were asking American suppliers for prices of soybeans and pork. Let's read that sentence again. The Commerce Ministry said Thursday importers were asking American suppliers for prices of soybeans and pork. It gave no indication whether they planned to place orders. Washington wants Beijing to roll back plans for state-led development of leaders in robotics and other technologies. The United States, Europe, and other trading partners argue these violate These violate China's trade commitments. Some American officials worry they will erode U.S. industrial relationship. Well, airlines charged $1.5 billion for baggage in the second quarter. This is actually an article out of the Dallas Morning News. American Airlines made more than $350 million by charging baggage fees between April and June, blowing past records after raising rates a year ago. U.S. Airlines combined charged $1.5 billion for baggage in the three-month period, despite hundreds of cancellations due to the grounding of the Boeing 737 MAX line of jets on March 13. That's according to data released Monday by the U.S. Bureau of Transportation Statistics. Fort Worth-based American Airlines managed to boost its baggage fee revenue by 12% during the second quarter. Atlanta's Delta Airlines boosted bag fee revenues by 42% to $288 million. Bag fees continue to be a major revenue source for the airlines and a growing one, particularly after raising fees last year. Well, small manufacturers and retailers are losing confidence in the national economy, yet they remain upbeat about their own prospects. That's the finding of a third-quarter survey of 1,000 companies released last week by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and MetLife. 63% of manufacturing companies surveyed were optimistic about the economy, but that's down from 69% in a second-quarter survey. 53% of retailers were optimistic, but down from 59%. The drop in optimism wasn't surprising given the challenges both industries face. Well, the WTO, that is the World Trade Organization, will grant the United States permission to impose tariffs on the European Union as part of a prolonged scuffle over subsidies given to European plane maker Airbus, European officials said on Monday, that a move that is likely to exacerbate trade tensions across the Atlantic. The ruling, to be published in the week of September 30, is the global trade body's final decision in a 15-year-old dispute over the government assistance that Europe provides to its major plane manufacturer. It will clear the way for the United States to impose tariffs on European goods. Well, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker agreed Monday to ramp up talks on securing an elusive Brexit deal, but the two sides gave starkly different assessments of how far apart they are. The two men held their first face-to-face talks over a two-hour lunch in Juncker's native Luxembourg amid claims from Britain that an agreement is in sight. "Yes, there is a good chance of a deal, and yes, I see the shape of it," Johnson said after the meeting. EU leaders are far more skeptical. Well, back home, the Wake County School Board is set to reward Superintendent Kathy Moore with a 5% raise and a contract extension to mark her first year on the job. The board is scheduled to vote Tuesday on a contract amendment that would raise Moore's salary by more than $14,000, with part of the money going to a deferred comp. Her contract would also be extended by two more years through June 2023. Now, Moore's current base salary of $281,004 would rise to more than $290,000 a year after the raise. Under the amendment, 1.5% of the 5% salary increase will be paid as deferred comp. She's already getting $20,000 a year in deferred compensation as part of her original contract. Well, Wegmans makes a big bet on the Triangle as the Raleigh store prepares to open. Wegmans is betting big on the Triangle as the Rochester-based grocery giant prepares to open its first store at the end of September. The grand opening for the highly anticipated Wegmans Raleigh location, that's the first of six stores planned for the region, is set for 7 a.m. Sunday, September the 29th at 1200 Wake Town Drive off Interstate 440 north of downtown. The Raleigh store will be the company's 100th location. With plans for multiple Wegmans in the Triangle, it represents a radical departure from the traditionally conservative pace at which the grocer expands. Chairman Danny Wegman says the company has come a long way over the decades. He says, hard to believe. It's funny. I think when I was 10, we probably had 10 stores. Much of the growth happened in the last few decades. Still, Wegman's president and CEO, Colleen Wegman, said 6 new stores announced for a single market is much faster than usual for the company. We're placing a big bet here, she says. We're excited about the market and hope they like us. It is a big deal for us. So why the Triangle? It checks all the boxes, with the 2 biggest metrics being population growth and quality of education, things the Triangle has in abundance. Colleen Wegman says higher education correlates closely with interest in food, and as a grocery store that sells higher-end food products, Wegman is looking to invest in areas where people are willing to spend more on better food. In addition to the full assemblage of groceries found in most 100,000-square-foot grocery stores, Wegmans also has several stations featuring perishable goods such as meats, seafood, and cheese, which can often be on the pricier side due to their quality. In addition to population growth and education, the Wegmans say this area is simply a great place to invest with an eye for innovation, a healthy economy, and a population of warm and caring people. A North Carolina YouTuber, that's YouTube, a North Carolina YouTuber is suing a Washington man in federal court, alleging he's exploiting his online persona by selling counterfeit goods on Amazon. Now, Greenville's Jimmy Donaldson, who uses the online persona Mr. Beast, is suing Washington resident Thomas Bakenkai, alleging that Bakenkai is selling goods on Amazon with the Mr. Beast logo Donaldson created himself. Since 2012, Donaldson, according to the suit, has posted more than 700 Mr. Beast videos featuring giveaways and nutty experiments, such as one entitled, Can 20,000 Magnets Catch a Bullet in Mid-Air? Other videos, including breaking into the world's toughest safe and destroying my friend's car and surprising him with a new one, Mr. Donaldson is currently one of the most popular YouTube personalities, and his Mr. Beast YouTube channel has more than 20 million followers. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure and listen to us next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They have served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and the broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website,